I need you to understand something. I have stage 3 pancreatic cancer. I won't be here in 3 months.
Straight out the lab. Straight out the lab, joined today by somebody who is a entrepreneur, has grown several businesses and exited over several million dollars, has one of the biggest, the biggest insurance marketing agencies. Is that correct?
Correct.
In the country. I had to get this right because this guy truly has a story. My guy, welcome to the show, Sean Mike.
Thanks for having me, man. It's an absolute honor, bro.
Man, I didn't even know where to start with this story because when we started, we spoke briefly and we're just getting to meet, but I said, we got to get you on the show. We've got to.
That.
Because it's truly a rags to riches story. And we love that in Straight Out the Lair. First of all, we have several friends in common.
Yep.
And your name keeps on coming up.
Appreciate that.
And now we get to meet literally in the flesh.
Yep.
But what a story, mate. What a story. And let's talk about, first of all, you have 35,000 agents in the United States. Mm-hmm. What a feat. And how, first of all, how on earth do you even control such an empire from the seat you're sitting at?
First of all, thanks again for having me. Your name's been coming up forever. And I came in here about a month ago to decide it'd be a good idea to work out with Merriman. I hadn't done legs in about 18 years. So he said, let's do legs. And I was like, yeah, sounds good. About halfway through, he tried to trick me. He was, how many circuits, he was trying to get me to cop out. But I'm like, I'd rather die than quit. So my legs actually were genuinely, embarrassingly sore for 11 days, which is good. Then we went and did a MIT workout and thought my heart was, so it was good. It was good level up for me.
And we're talking about Sean Merriman.
Sean Merriman.
The legend.
Yeah, it's my buddy, the legend, no doubt about it. And so it's funny because, Flex, I got into the life insurance business 15 years ago. And I had already been in real estate, sold the company, exited that. That was great. Waste management. I've been doing a lot of different things. And I found that industry. And I worked for another guy for 5 years. And it was a pretty good sized company. The company I got, we did about $800 million last year in sales for the year. And it's bigger than anybody else out there in our space. But I worked for somebody for 5 years. And I was like, dude, I don't here are all the things I don't like. So like in my life, when I've done something, I pay a lot of attention to the things I don't like, the way they're done. If you grow up and you're like, I don't like my parents doing that, shit, don't do it. Just don't do it. So I learned a lot. And then when we started, I was CEO, CFO, COO, CTO, and it just started getting really big. And I never built it to have 30,000 agents or we'll do a billion in premium this year for a year.
Wow.
And I never built it for that reason. I just hated where I was at and wanted to start something on my own. And I did, and it morphed from 12 of us to 35,000 and still growing, man.
35,000, and you just said that you're possibly going to hit a billion this year?
I will definitely do a billion.
Definitely.
Definitely.
How do you stay so motivated knowing that all our cash flow is coming in?
Yeah.
And you still get up to, listen, I've followed you, I've seen what you're doing and who you're around, you're so motivated daily, and you preach about it too.
100%.
Leading from the front. How is it that you've got a bank account with a lot of zeros in it, and you still got your foot in the gas?
I really, truly was raised with nothing. That's the other reason I started doing some of the stuff on the podcast. Your story's true. First thing about your story is it's true. And the problem is a lot of people's stories aren't true. There's people watching shit on a daily basis, and those guys are not telling the truth.
And we know some of these
And
guys.
We know them intimately. It's, dude, that's not true. That didn't happen to you. And that's actually a disservice to other people. If you want to just BS people, that's fine. But when they start following you, taking your advice, doing things for their family based on what you've said and you're lying, you can hurt them, right? You can legitimately harm them as people. I think for me, as you start looking at what we were doing, I didn't have anything. Like, I had nothing. So my motivator, and this is was never money. I wanted to live a better life than I was raised in. But I didn't have any delusions of, I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to make $1 million. When I got out of college to play baseball, that was it. I was going to join the Marines. I went to my ASFAB, did all that, the Army. I was 17. My mom's like, you're not joining the military. I think in her mind, she wanted to be like my dad. So he was in the military. So somehow that was a correlation for her. So she's going to go into college. And I'm like, I don't want to go to college. We have no fucking desire to go to college. And then my buddy was going to play baseball, and he's, yo, they were trying to recruit you, but you ain't got nobody to talk to, parent-wise, so, like, why don't you call him up? So I went and got a degree, but all I ever wanted to do at that point in time was make $100,000 a year. That's what I wanted. I'm like, you know what? One day I'm going to get out of it. I graduated college in 95. I'm like, if I can make 100 grand a year, I'll be set. I wanted to not live the way I lived. Took my job, got a job. I went to the police academy. They threw me out of there, to be honest with you. I was 4.5 months. I made about 4 months. I was out of control. I was 21. Guys would get in my face, and I'd be like, fuck you. And then I was like, if you can.
You?
Yeah, I know it's hard to believe. But if you can kick my ass, you can talk to me that way.
Yeah.
And if you can't, and you might be able to, but we need to find out. I didn't have that. I wasn't raised that way. I had a lot of anger, a lot of bullshit. So my buddy, after they were kicking me out, they were like, dude, we're not going to keep you here. Like, you're going to end up getting arrested while you're a police officer, which is probably true. Like, I was in ethics class, and they said, they're like, hey, you pull over a car, and it's 11 o'clock at night, and there's nobody around, and there's $200,000 in cash. What do you do? And I'm like, fucking keep it. Like, why would I give it to you guys? What are you going to do with it? And it was just ongoing from there. I didn't do well. And you know, I liked the physical part of it and all that. Mm. And then I got a job as a social worker. And I'm like, I remember, Flex, I was probably 28 or 9. And I'm like, dude, I made $100,000 for the year. I worked all my overtime, and then I was doing, like, I made $100,000. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I was like, all right, so money's never motivated me. Then I was accumulating real estate like crazy, but I was cash flowing, but every time I made money, I bought another building. So I started buying buildings when I was like 20 years old.
How do you get into that, though, at that age? Was it a person that said, hey, listen, invest in real estate at that age?
My mom got a real estate license when I was like 9 or 10, and she quit. After 4 months. And I had this massive chip on my shoulder anyway because the way I thought everybody treated us, mm-hmm. the way they looked at us. My mom moved us into a nice school system, which meant we went to the very bottom. There weren't many people that had less than we did in the town, like at all. And it was a better area she moved us to, but I liked my old area better because I understood it better and I thought I had better friends and I could connect with people. I didn't feel inadequate.
Yeah.
For me, I was like trying to look for something to do, and I had a baseball coach who was, had played professional baseball for years. His name was John Ellis. He passed away recently. And he came and coached a travel team I was on. We had a really good team. And I just started watching everything he did. And then I'm like, how did you make your money after professional baseball? He's like, real estate. And I said, why real estate? He said, because anybody can do it. He goes, it just takes balls. And I was like, well, I don't have a lot, but I got that. So I'll try it. And I bought my first piece of property, yeah, like at 20. And it Damn. Was, and I bought a piece that I was going to try to turn into a 3-lot subdivision. And the realtor, her name was Nancy. She's at the time, God, 40s. And I go through the process and I go from submitting an application to, when I didn't know anything about this stuff, right? Like, I want to do a subdivision. I go to the town planner. The engineer I used got arrested for tax evasion. So they locked all my records in, so I couldn't get that out, wasted the money with him. And I was young and have a lot of money. And I went through the process, and she, about 8 months into it, she called me up and she said, how's it going? I said, it's not going. I bought it from you for, as how long ago it was. I bought it from you for 40. It was next to a junkyard. They claimed there was contamination. The asshole I bought it from got mad that I was doing a subdivision. He was in his 60s. I'm sure he's long dead now. And was nothing but a pain in my ass because he was like, why are you going to make money? I'm going to make money. And she said, would you consider selling it to me for what you have into it? I said, why would you do that? Because this thing's a fucking loser. And she said, because I've been doing this forever and I'll get 2 lots out of it. I won't make much, but you're going to be successful in this and we'll do more business together. And I was like, why do you, if I'm not good at a lot, I'm a really good question asker. So I was like, why do you think I'll be good at it? And she says, you don't take no for an answer. You have a good work ethic. And people, I think she likes, they like you. So she bought it back from me, got her 2 lots, made a few bucks. And then we did tons of deals. Wow. Together moving forward.
So she's seen something in you that was going to be a long-term play.
I didn't see it in me. She lived in a nice house. I never lived there. We lived in apartment from apartment to apartment. I'd gotten, my area I was living at the time was okay, but it wasn't great. Mm. And she saw something I didn't see. And she was very well put together. Her and her husband were great people. He was very successful. She was very successful. In my world, they were like ultra rich. Now looking back on it now, I'm like, dude, I look at what I've accomplished. But to them, they were like ultra rich. And I liked it. It was like juice for me. Like I started buying buildings everywhere, and I made a decision to buy everything within 4 square miles. Mm. And I lived 10 minutes away, and I accumulated hundreds and hundreds of rental properties. Damn. And then I ended up selling them all down the road and had no idea what they'd be worth. But when I got paid, I was like, damn. And that was my first exit out of any kind of company.
Can you say what the number is?
Oh yeah. Millions and millions of dollars. The 3 companies I've sold have been in excess of, it's hundreds of millions of dollars.
I'm sorry, keep it on the timeline. So this was the real estate chapter, and you were in your 20s.
Yeah.
Cause let's just pick up on the timeline, because since we've gone down to childhood, which we can talk about, we can circle back on, but this was your first entrepreneurial.
100%.
You dip in the toe.
100%.
And then you put the full foot in, and then you went full out. Where were you then? Did you then Well, just take the timeline.
So I'm doing real estate. I'm dumping my money back. And every time I get something, I went into subdivisions. Then I went into land development. And I was making money, but I was putting everything back in because I was like, I don't think I was trying to build an empire. I was just competitive.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm watching other people do it, and they have really good lives. Why can't I do it?
Yeah.
So I rode that out through, man, the better part of 10, 12, 14 years. And then I still had the company, and we started cash flow. And at 36 years of age, I was buying a property, and a guy says to me, why don't you get your life insurance license?
Hmm.
And I said, why would I do that? And he said, because we have leads. And I was like, damn, I never had a lead-based business. Real estate was sphere of influence. I'd have to ask you, hey, Flex, who do you know? I come to the gym. I ask you. You refer me to somebody else. There's a lot of networking, which is fine, but I couldn't scale it with a business, like agency. I bought properties, and that's how I scaled. And it was a lot of active work. It wasn't passive. And he said, you can build an agency. You recruit people, put them in, and when they sell policies, you make money.
Mm.
And I'm like, give me the leads. So he goes to the trunk of his little Civic, grabs me some leads, hands them to me. So I take my cell phone out and I call him. Call the first lead I got. I got no insurance license. Call him up. And it has a lead. So I just basically, you, I'm like, Flex, yep, Sean. Hey, man, what's up? And you're like, what's up? Do I know you? I'm like, yeah, dude, you fill this form out. Here's your date of birth. You said you want insurance. Here's how much you can get. I'll see you tomorrow at noon. And the guy on the phone was like, sounds good. So dude looked at me and goes, how did you know how to do that? I go, they fill out a freaking form. What do you mean, how do I know how to do that? I said, do you not do it? He's no, I haven't even called him yet. I said, can I go see him? And he's like, you need an insurance license. I'm like, shit, how do I get that? So I went, got my insurance license, started calling him, and I loved it. In real estate, people always said to me, that happened in 08. So the market, real estate market crashed.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people said to me, I understand why you got into real estate, I'm like, and I don't make excuses. I said, dude, a lot of people stayed in it. 08 didn't ruin me. I was fine. I had a lot of properties, but I got out of it because I wasn't positioned to do the things they were doing. I had my properties.
Yeah.
I actually forced a lot of people into rentals. I actually did a little bit better. But the reality is that no matter what we've gone through, somebody was successful. Economic, pandemic, it doesn't matter. So my thing is, what I ask people when I try to recruit them, I go, what are you doing now? And they'll tell me.
Mm.
And then if they're like, I work at this company and it sucks, I go, somebody makes money there. Why weren't you? It might have some flaws, but why weren't you making money there? And it challenges people because I like accountable people. Like when I fuck up.
Yeah.
No problem. I don't. And I'm the hardest on me. I got into life insurance, still had my real estate, and launched a life insurance company. And actually, I'm sorry, worked for 5 years for another guy. And about 4 years into it, I went to him and I said, hey, dude, your model's flawed. I'm the biggest sales guy here, and I have the biggest team, and I don't make any real money. I'm grossing $1.4 million, and shit, I'm keeping $150 grand. This ain't going to work, okay? And if I'm your number one, it's not going to work. And the guy was, you know how some people, I call it liquid courage. They're super nice to your face. Then they get a few pops in them at night, and they get on the phone and say shit they would never say to your face. And I was like, I'm not going to let a grown man speak to me that way, because I don't speak to grown men that way. I'm not going to let them speak to me that way. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm going to quit. I just didn't know what I was going to do. And waited about a year, and I found, because when you have distribution, you have to find a carrier, an insurance carrier. No different than if you're in real estate, and you need more, whatever's feeding you and paying the bills. So I need an insurance carrier, and I found one that took a chance on me. I met with a guy. I was calling people, nobody, because, dude, it was just me. And to run a marketing organization or an agency, you need a lot of people. You need an infrastructure. I didn't have any of that. Just me. And I met with a guy, and he said, why should I contract you? And I said, look to you up online. To be honest with you, your dad's a very successful high school football coach in Texas. And he said, yeah, he is. And I said, let me tell you something. If you contract me, I'll be the best fucking linebacker you've ever met in your life. Fullback, I'll run everything over. Nobody will outwork me. So if you're questioning yourself, go back to your dad, take a video of me talking to you, and ask your dad if he believes I'm telling the fucking truth. And he goes, that's a weird answer, but he contracted me.
Wow.
And so then basically we took that, and I got sued because the company I left. And that was the funny thing. That's when I knew it was going to be okay, because everybody's, I got sued. And I got sued in federal court, state court. I didn't even know there's this many courts. And these guys all call me, what are we going to do? And I'm like, what do you mean what am I going to do? We're going to go to fucking work. What do I care? I'm like, I'm more worried about what I'm going to get for lunch. Shit like that don't bother me. And then I kept working, and I hired an attorney. And they're like, hey, if you keep working, they're going to get a restraining order against you. And I was like, fuck it, let's do it. They filed a TR, they got it granted, temporary restraining order. My attorneys called and said, you're out of business. Now, I had already had money. I wasn't freaking out. Yeah. Plus, money was never my motivator. Now, I was like, I'm going to win.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, I'm going to win. So I remember my attorney called me and said, it's over. I was doing a meeting in Destin, Florida. And I feel like somebody kicked me in the stomach. So now I got about 140 guys with me. And I don't want to let them down. And I was like, so I hung up. I said, I'm doing a meeting. Let me call you back. Went in the meeting, did the meeting. That's the other thing. Like, shit happens. What are you going to do? Went in, did the meeting, got done, called them back. I was like, hey, I'm no attorney, but if it's a restraining order and I violate it, I'll have to go to court. Yeah, I'm like, let's do that then. Let's get in front of the judge. I'm going to violate the shit out of this thing. Every clause I'm going to violate. Let's go to court and let's talk about the validity of the contract. And I'm going to get all the people at work with me, sign whatever document meaning them sign to, because I didn't make them do anything. Violate it. They filed the violation. On the way to Greensboro, my attorney's, you might have to, the judge will be upset. I'm like, we don't know if he's going to be upset. Stop being such a fucking just bitch. Who hired you? I hired you. Yeah. Matter of fact, my first hearing, I fired my attorney. I left the law firm because he was awful. He's like shaking and we were in federal court. So we went in for research. What do you think? I'm like, you're fired. I'm like, and the other guy came out. I'm like, dude, why don't you handle my case? He's a pain in the ass. He's a partner. I'm like, he sucks. So he left. He had said a few things as he got out down the road. You're not going to be successful. I was like, fine, good luck. I called him Little John. It made me feel better because he was like 120 pounds. And he left. And that guy that was at the law firm, I convinced him to quit and start his own law firm.
Shit.
Yeah. And he's, how do, you know, like I said, dude, I'm going to get sued all the fucking time. And I'll always use you. Like you and your coach. I'll always use you. Like you'll always be my guy. And to this day.
Wow.
Like, you're my guy.
How long
like,
has that been?
Dude, 10 years.
Wow.
Like, you're my guy. No matter what. And there's bigger and better, right? There's law firms. I'm like, you. And they scale from nothing to a pretty decent-sized law firm. And I remember I went to court, run the way, and they're like, the judge might, like, he might be real upset. And if he thinks you're in contempt of court, I'm like, what am I going to do? Spend 3 days in Greensboro federal prison? Dude, that's better than most places. That's better where I grew up. And it's not real prison. It's not a stupid story. And I got in front of the judge, and I'll never forget. He looked over, and he started asking me about, he said, hey, they're saying, because contracts require consideration. So I always tell people, like, just because you have a contract, and I'm not an attorney, so I'm just telling you, I violate the shit out of contracts all the time. What I mean by that is, if you change, there's no consideration. If you and I are partners, and we agree, we're 50-50, and I leave here, and I don't do shit, and 2 years later, you're like, you and your wife are like, Sean don't do nothing. Like, first, he doesn't do anything. And you go, you know what? You're right. He doesn't do anything. You have a conversation, man, I still don't do anything. There's consideration that I was supposed to bring 50% to the table. Effort, equity, whatever we agree to. I don't bring shit. And you go ahead and go, you know what? I'm just going to keep 100% of the money. And I go ahead and sue you. Well, dude, you get to go, okay, explain to them how you held up your, where was my consideration for me and my family? The judge started asking me questions about leads and training. He's like, who provides leads? I'm like, dude, I get leads. I get my own leads.
Yeah.
Then he's like, who does the training? I'm like, should I do half the training at the company? I'm not even that good. Why do I got to pay myself to train? He just kept listening to me and asking me questions and asking me questions. We left. Like 8 days later, he's, nope, we're going to drop the restraining order. And I was like, oh, y'all are screwed.
Yeah.
And then we went to work. I went from 100 agents to, I recruited everybody, anybody. Dude, my pitch was, why are you not freaking working with us? Explain that to me. I pay the best. We got the best training. And dude, just went on a mission.
So explain that to me. From you getting paid, bringing in what, 1.2, 1.4, you said?
1.4 million.
And you were taking home
they were
100.
150.
That's crazy.
Insane. And what got me, Flex, wasn't my income, because I had some money, real estate, some stuff was coming in. I was like, if I'm the number one guy.
But that's these guys.
What are they? And they're looking at me. Dude, I'm driving. I'm not there yet. No, I knew I was building a real estate deal but just on this deal, then I'm like, they're looking up at me, at my income. Shit, I'm leaving them to path of destruction. I don't mind leading myself into a path of destruction. That's my choice. But I don't want to lead anybody else in a path of destruction. That's my guilt kicks in. I don't want to hurt anybody. I'm okay running out and doing something stupid. But if you're my buddy's, hey, I'm jumping off the building. I'm like, don't jump off the building. You could break something. Your wife would be pissed. I'll jump off the fucking building. I don't care if I get hurt. You know what I mean? And it really was, but you know what? I learned so much about business. Like I think I got a degree better than anybody could ever get at any business school in the time out, because I was in charge of everything. I'll never forget when I was doing my first exit and they're like, who are your C-level executives? And I was like, what does that mean? And the lady looked at me like, I was like, ma'am, I just don't know what you mean. And if I don't know, I'm going to ask. She's a CEO, CO. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. C-level executives. Okay. I'm like, I'm all of them. Every one of them, bro. And so I learned a lot about delegation and growing the company. And obviously, it's taken off like this. And
yeah,
it's been unbelievable, man. COVID, we grew, 700% in a couple of years because it's life insurance. And I also really love what we do. That's the other thing. I liked real estate. I liked waste management. but I love life insurance. And I think, you know, you talked about your journey. You loved it. Loved it, dude. Even when you talk about money. Drinking soup and chicken, and I'm like, dude, there's none of that sounds good. You're like, but you just loved it.
Yeah.
I love the life insurance business.
So you said you were started recruiting everything, right?
Everybody.
What was it that you learned and transitioned from your old company into the new? Obviously, you said that you look after your guys, you pay the best.
Yeah.
Well, so what, obviously, pay being on.
I took everything that I didn't like. So I sat down, like you do with your notes. I sat down, I was like, all right, let me list the 10 things I didn't like about the way it was structured. Got it. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here and I'm going to counter each one of those. I didn't like the way people were getting paid. I'm going to pay higher. Okay, got it. Training, where most people fail in business in general that I've seen from a training perspective, is they do it based on seniority. Okay, so they go, all right, you know what? Tom has been here 10 years. Let's let Tom train. And I'm like, but Tom don't do nothing anymore. So our deal was if you wanted to have a voice at the company, you had to be productive. You had to be doing something. If you weren't productive, you didn't have a voice. Then we're like, let's generate leads, but let these guys, we'll teach them to generate their own leads. They can go do it. Like, so we empowered the hell out of people. We put a profit sharing deal together. That's now done really well with employees. Hey, you know what, guys? Let's grow it together. Y'all want to make more money? I'd like you to make more money too. Here's what we're making. As we grow the net, you can make this percentage more and share the shit out of it. Now, the first 3 years, I tell people all the time, we were doing like significant volume. I remember when I was getting sued, actually, they wanted to subpoena my tax returns. I told my attorney, why are you fighting this? He's like, why do you want them to have your tax returns? I'm like, dude, this company, I put every dollar back into it. I'd actually like everybody to see what I'm doing. Number one, it would teach them something. Number two, the guys that work here, I think they love me already, would love me even more. I'm not keeping any of it. Every dollar that came in, 99 cents went out the door. Now, thankfully, I'd done some other things and I was doing what I wanted, but I wanted to scale it. And what people were saying is the model you have is not going to work. You're not keeping enough money. And I said, all right, guess what? If I make it 3 years, y'all are totally fucked. The competition. Yeah, I'm like, hey, you might be right. And I do other things. But and once it started making, then it was just like, then it was a snowball. And I think also, Flex, the hands-on deal. There's psychology of selling and there's psychology of making money in an override. Or it's if I come into the gym and I'm paying you to train me, dude, there's some psychology behind the fact that you better bring me value. Or after a while, I'm like, dude, I'm just wasting the money. I used to have a personal trainer. I'd walk in, dude, like eating a honey bun. It's pathetic. And I wasn't trying to compete. I just didn't want to die early. I want to be in good health. I want to take my shirt off and not feel bad about myself. I was the fattest I ever was when I had a personal trainer.
Wow.
He didn't give a shit about me at all. He just would, I'd come in. I was strong. I couldn't run 25 feet. But
honey buns will do it for you.
What's that? The honey buns invention, man. I didn't even know what I was doing, but we couldn't do. And then I got rid of him and started doing my own thing. But we call it the psychology of an override. In our business, an override. If I sell a policy, you make money. I'm cool with you making money as long as you're doing something. But the minute you're not, after a while, I'm like, hey, he don't do nothing. Mm-hmm. And then three or four or five of us go, he don't do nothing. No matter how big and bad the person is, enough people are mad at you, dude. They'll throw you over.
Wow.
So it was just learning that and also being in business with people. You know, I didn't like when somebody told me that they were my, like, upline. Or it's like, dude, you just work here like me. And I don't like when people, I don't do that with anybody. When they're like, I was doing a meeting recently. This kid came up to me and said, what's it feel like to be in charge? My dad says you're the boss. I said, dude, your dad's the boss. He's an independent dude. It's his company. Your dad's badass.
Wow.
And the guy's like, why'd you say that? I'm like, dude, number one, it's true. And number two, it's your kid. You're running your own business under this umbrella.
Yeah.
My job is call me whatever. Tell me I'm not above. You too big to do the small things. You'll be too small to do the big things. And you talked about earlier when we were bullshitting, being humble.
Humble is the key.
Dude, being humble. I could, what separates the guy sleeping up the street and doing stupid shit, those are thin lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been sober 23 years, but if I was still drinking and partying, smoking crack and using coke and eating fucking mushrooms, I'd be up some fucking street fighting somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning at a fucking Burger King and going to jail again.
I want to put a pin on that because that is a massive part of your life. But talking about family first life, you've created such a culture in that company.
100%.
Through respect, transparency. How would you keep that culture? What do you do to keep getting that workforce to turn up as driven as you every day?
It's first of all, it's a big judgment-free zone. People come in with their own baggage, and I want everybody to understand that they can achieve whatever they want. Number two, humility is huge. The top guys and girls that train, the minute they start talking about how great they are, I don't let them train anymore. We just did an event. We had 6,000 people in Irving, Texas, and one of the guys said to me, man, like all the people are so relatable. I said, do you know how we achieve that? And I did it every, and it sound, the events I take very seriously. We would, every event, morning and afternoon, we have a speakers meeting, go through what they can talk about. But the big thing was, guys, if you convince them that you're great, now, first of all, you have a great work ethic. You have courage. You have all those things. But you're not superhuman. Bot training. Everybody, dude, everybody can't do what you did. No, they can't. That's a different level, and there's some ability that's required. God had to give you something that you took it to a different level. But in life insurance sales, everybody's completely equal.
Even playing field.
It's like literally doesn't discriminate in any capacity as long as you work having a good attitude. So one of the greatest things we do culture-wise is to get every man and woman to go, I can do what they're doing. And then they're saying, yes, you can. So I bring my top guys up on stage all the time, and now they know because I've been doing it long enough. And I'm like, is there anything you do that they can't do? And some of them want to say how great they are. And if they say that there's some shit that they're great at and they can't do, I'll never let them fucking speak again. Because number one, they're lying. And number two, you're demotivating everybody. Now, most of the companies I was part of, they'd bring these people up and they'd raise them above. They're holier than thou. They're better than everybody else in the entire world. And then people are like, look, I can't do what he's doing. So it's a built-in. You actually allow the person, you validate their excuse because they can't do it now. And then you have a company that doesn't grow. And you're like, why isn't it growing? Because you're all egotistical. So people bring me in and consult. I was with a company recently, small company, nice people. And I'm like, dude, you're all egomaniacs. Like, you're megalomaniac. This is out of control. And I'm like, you're an egomaniac. They were cool. After a couple hours, they're like, dude, we really appreciate your feedback. I'm like, you're demotivating them. I don't know where your ego comes from. I don't know if it's insecurity. That's your business. But at the end of the day, most of the people that start with us, dude, they're struggling with their self-image. They're struggling. There are people come by this gym intimidated to come in.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
They see the Instagram and they be like, oh, man, I'm not big enough.
I'm not big enough.
I hear it all the time.
Correct. But where's that come from?
Insecurity.
Insecurity. Biggest causation of insecurity is lack of unconditional love. The thing about my mom, while it was an interesting childhood, my mother would pick me up after I got arrested, and the first thing she would say to me is, I love you. She'd be mad, but she would, no matter what, she'd work her three jobs, 3 a.m, going to bed, I love you. It didn't matter. And I think it really allowed me to have a healthy self-image. Mm-hmm. Man, the culture is everything. I'm rabid about protecting it, and I make sure I lead with zero ego and complete humility. And anytime somebody comes up to me to say anything, it's I want to be like a mirror and give the attention back to them. I ain't a window with that shit. Give it back. You're right. Man, I can't believe what you do. I'm like, I have great people. Man, you guys are bigger than anybody else. I have great people. He's great. Our lead, this one's great. You see him, he's great. And then in the meantime, telling them, hey, you are great, but now your job is convince them they're great. You start acting like you're greater than the world, I'm going to take away your power to talk to them. Mm-hmm. Because I'm running it with complete humility, and that's how you do it. And also, dude, things in our lives could change like that.
Amen. It's true.
So I ain't going to complain about shit. I'm going to be happy every day. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be persistent and getting around good people. That's how I met you, finding good people that I got around that know you. Sean Merriman built a business with us. He does all kinds of things. But he's, dude, I love this. I didn't grow up with this stuff. And his story growing up, like, he's, dude, nobody I knew had life insurance. I'm like, come join us. Mm. He builds a business. We got a lot of guys that are doing that are coming out of pro sports. So
how did you guys link up?
So it's funny because there's a guy named Brad Alkinson who knows him, local guy. And he says, you should meet him. I said, sure. So I go to do a podcast, but he was doing something, so I showed up. I never met him. He was with another guy that I work with. And the other guy's, man, look, he's a monster. And he's a monster. He's a fucking monster. And he's here, man. I said, why don't you go to the other guy? Why don't you go train with him one day? He's, I'm not training with him at all. And I didn't know Sean at all. And I said, can I fight you? To Merriman? He goes, do you want to? I was like, dude, how badass is that? First of all, there's nobody thinks I'm going to win. Number one. And, dude, I'm not saying I'm going to. I'm sure I'm not. But what a badass situation to walk out with a busted lip or a Brock eye that you gave to me. Sean Merriman did this to me, bro. Like, I fought his ass.
It's a good guilt trip, too.
It's a great, yeah, exactly. So but we just started laughing, and we connected, and I just, and the thing for me with him was he was very relatable, and everybody that I brought around him, he was super fucking cool to and nice to. And I was like, I really like this guy. And I love what he's doing with Lights Out. And I like talking to him about it and just hearing. I'm a big part, you know, we sponsor. I like doing that because he's just a good human being. And I got to a point in my life where I'm like, I'm going to surround myself with good people.
Yeah,
I just am. And I discern who I like by my interactions with them.
I love it.
Not this, because that's never actually worked for me ever. So I'm like, dude, I appreciate it, but I'm a grown up. I don't need your fucking opinion, and I'll make my own. But thank you so much for that. Like, I got me. Like,
yeah, Sean's, we'll figure it out. He's a stud in the gym. There's not one fan he doesn't interact with that comes 100%. Up to him and takes a photo with. And 100%. Again, talking about defecting the compliments. He's like, man, you're in great shape. I love that. I'll be honest.
It's unbelievable.
That's why I pride myself on the culture in the gym. Oh. And I know the viewers have kind of heard me talk about this many times, but if I'm not going around the gym fluffing my feathers and I pay the light bulbs, who the fuck are these guys coming in, right? So we've got rid of people.
And nobody did that when I was here. I'd never been here. And I wasn't intimidated to come in, but I'm like, dude, I'm going to be in the worst shape in the place, right? Oh. And I come in, I'm like, dude, everybody, super nice, super cool. This one's none of, dude, I've had more people at a damn, the one that's $12 a month with more attitude and shit than in here. And you're like, dude, why are you throwing the weights around, bro? Calm down.
Calm down.
Like, I can do that. I'm 51. Like, you're 24, bro. Have some respect for yourself.
You know? Wow. I want to go back to the employment side of things, because if this viewer's watching this, then now we're thinking, man, I would love to get into life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You said you've got all walks of life that have stepped foot in there, dude, regardless of past. And obviously, you have a past, which I want to talk 100%. To you about. So how does somebody go about now getting into life insurance? Listen to this.
First of all, and I ain't biased. Like, I'm biased. I ain't objective. You should work with him for his life. Like, I'm just saying, it's a great industry game. If you want to work with somebody else, you can. But you can get your insurance license in any state. We go ahead and get you, pay for the class for you. You can hit me up on Instagram. I'll find a guy or girl local to help you.
Oh, you pay for it, too.
I'll pay for the class.
Wow.
Yeah. You got to go ahead and pay your state fee and take your test, but you got to finish the course first. We'll pay for it. Then you get rolling. But I think that's the thing for me. What's been so cool to see people who thought they could never be a businessman or businesswoman, because there's this crazy misnomer that, like, you need to come from a certain background. Or, dude, I started with no business acumen. I accumulated along the way. Real estate meetings. Now I can walk into about any meeting in the state if I'm familiar with it. I grew up in Connecticut. You put me back in Connecticut. You give me a piece of property. Dude, I've done it so many times. Mm. It's just, I've continued to do it. Just like you trained. I just continued to do it. I was in it all night long. I was reading. Stuff. I know the shit. I know the wetlands. I know what happens. I know what a vernal pool is. I know what you're supposed to do here. I understand the crossings. Wetlands. I get it. But I did it for so long. So, I think growing up thought, I had a chip on my shoulder, so I wanted to do it. I wasn't sure I could do it, but I just wanted to give it hell to see if I could do it. So anybody could do that. You find me on Instagram. My last name's M-E-A-I-K-E. I'm the only one that I think has that. You ain't going to find a Sean Mike with the same name. And hit me up, fanfirstlife.com. But it's a great industry no matter where you are. You might work with somebody else. I'm sure they're great. But it's a rewarding industry. And I'll give you a quick story, Flex. I was doing this for 4 months. And, dude, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. It was really, but I think the day I loved it was I went to meet with a lady, and I had a form. I didn't have an appointment. So what I would do is if they didn't answer the phone, I would take the lead, write a time on it, and circle it, and I'd show up, and I'd knock. And I'd be like, hey, I'm here for our appointment today at 2. You'd be like, appointment today at 2? I'm like, yeah, it's right here in the lead you fill out. 2 o'clock, Tuesday. I'm here. I'm like, I'm going to take my shoes off. That was always my thing. I just start taking my shoes off. I'm like, yeah, my mom always taught me. You want me to take my, and before you know it, I'm in the house selling life insurance, right? So I do that, and the lady says, before you come in, I need you to understand something. I have stage 3 pancreatic cancer, 32 years old. She goes, I won't be here in 3 months. And I was like, damn. And she said, can you help me? I said, I'll be really honest with you. The only policy you can get with your condition is what they call a graded policy, which means you got to live 2 years. And if you die anytime in the next 2 years, all you get your money, your beneficiary gets your money back and a little bit of interest. But that's what I can offer you. She's, I'm not interested in that. I want to get life insurance. I'm like, yeah, there's no company that's going to issue you a full policy where you die in 3 months or 2 months that you get paid. So she's like, hey, thanks for super, just like for a lady who's dying with 2 young kids. Mm-hmm. She's just like super, she was a super good person. Walk around the corner. Here goes my man. He's got the motorcycle cut on, ponytail, cuts his sleeves off his shirt. He's a monster. He's a fucking monster. And he looks at me and he goes, who the fuck are you? And I looked at her. I said, do you all have a dog? And she goes, no. Why? I go, oh, that makes sense. Because I'm thinking he wants to feel good about himself. So he doesn't laugh and he's, get off my property. And I was like, you're what? He's like, get off my property. And she stops. She goes, listen, he's been super nice. I filled out the form. He does life insurance. And he looked at her. He goes, I told you to stop asking for, he was just frustrated for her. And I told you, like, we can't get this. Stop. And I said, she goes, come on in. Like, okay. And you could tell he's fuming. Mm. And I'm thinking, he wasn't Merriman. Like, I'd have fucking dropped him. Like a fucking, but anyway, I was trying to be nice. And so I sit down. I never forget. I'm in this recliner. They're both on the couch, and he's thinking we're going to talk about her situation. Like, we'll get her life insurance. And I said, hey, guys, listen, first of all, thanks for letting me come in your house. I'm sorry for what you're going through. I looked at him and said, do you have any life insurance? And he loses it again, F-bomb after F-bomb. He goes, I have life insurance through work. And I said, well, you have to understand, when you have life insurance through work, you don't own the policy. They can change it. They can take it. You leave your job, new ownership, cut benefits, a million things happen. She looks at him and she goes, let's just hear him out. So I go, hey, dude, at your age, you can get $250,000. Here's all it's going to cost. The coverage starts today. He's healthy as can be, dude. I don't have a medication. He goes to the doctor. He's healthy as shit. And he goes back and forth on it. Then he says, I'll do it, but I'm not. And she did most of the closing. I just let her do it, right? And he said, I'll do it, but I'm not going to pay today. I'll pay when it comes in. The way life insurance works is the coverage isn't bound until they've taken money. So if I meet with you and I write a policy for you, your wife's a beneficiary, and I'm like, all right, cool. And you go, hey, dude, I'll pay it when it comes in. If you die from now until then, there's no benefit. Life insurance company's like, hey, we didn't get any money. You didn't bind us. So, and I didn't like, I always did it that way. I'm like, dude, I'm not taking that kind. I don't know anybody's ever going to, when they're going to die, but I'm not taking that chance. So I told him, I said, I can't do it that way. He's like, I understand. I said, listen, today is whatever day it was. It's going to come out tomorrow, next day. And if you want to change the date that it comes out in the future. And she's looked at him. She goes, just stop. Like, we can afford to pay for it. Let's do it. 2 days later in my office, my staff, Nicole, she comes in crying. And I was like, are you okay? And she shows me the local newspaper. Well, and dude, I don't have a big business at that point in time. It wasn't hard to track my clients. Mm-hmm. And she's, you had a client die yesterday. And I was like, damn. And I immediately start thinking about the 81-year-olds. Then I'll start. And she told me his name. And I'm like, I took it. And I was like, holy shit. The day I was at his house, he wasn't supposed to be there. And I don't believe things happen by accident. I do have a faith. He wasn't supposed to be there, but he was running late for work. I didn't have an appointment, but I showed up. He was leaving for work the next day. And then we saw it in the paper the day after that. On his motorcycle. Deer runs out in front of him. Nice day. He ends up laying the bike down, hits his head in the pavement, dies. And I was like, oh, shit, let me see if it got approved. And they drafted the payment, which they had. You're talking about it. I don't want to call her like right now. Hey, I just saw your, and I'm like, I want to make sure I'm there for her. Let me figure it out. Next day, I get a phone call. It's her brother. And he comes right at me. He's, I'm so-and-so's brother. How dare you tell her that she's going to get. I said, first of all, bro, I don't know who you are. I'm not talking to you. Second of all, he worked at a local bank that I used. I said, you're calling from the bank. Don't you have an insurance license? Because a lot of people at the banks do. Mm. And he said, yeah. I go, then why didn't you give her a policy? I'm not going to talk about if this is your sister or not. I can't violate. I'm not going to talk to you about anything. But and if I told somebody something, it's true. Mm. That was my first death claim. Family got $250,000. She died shortly thereafter of cancer. And the kids went to an aunt with $250,000. And I was like, dude, it's on. Meaning, like, I ain't leaving people unprotected anymore. Wow. And I wasn't really leaving them unprotected to begin with. But I was like, dude, I am, like, this is what I'm passionate about. And I fell in love with the business.
One day. And that guy was fighting, hell-bent, if he went for his wife.
Never thinking in a minute. No, you think I'm going to raise these kids by myself. Yeah. And they lost both their parents.
Wow, sad situation.
Very sad.
But the best, in that circumstance, at least it was coverage, right? That's what the bottom line is, what we're getting at right now.
100%.
You know, keeping in that, like, in the family realm, and you mentioned something earlier about your fight with alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
How did that come about, first of all? Where was the timeline in this?
My parents weren't together. They split when I was real young, which is probably good. My father was a really big drinker, and most of the men that I was around were big partiers. My old man didn't use drugs, but a lot of the dudes he was with used drugs. So I was around it when I was really young. I remember I was like 9 or 10, and he would come over on occasion, or I would see him on, and there'd be beer. And I remember taking a Miller Lite when I was maybe 10 out, like, down the street up in the woods and drinking it. I can remember it. It's weird.
What the hell is this shit? Had my first beer.
Yeah. And I'm like, but I wanted to do what the dudes around me were doing. The men, grown-ups around me, what they were doing, I thought, to me, they were everything. My uncles, his friends. I didn't realize that There's probably a lot of things I didn't want to do what they were doing, but I'm like, dude, these guys are badass. They're not afraid. There was a lot of physical violence, some stuff that shouldn't have happened without a doubt, because you don't ever put your hands on a woman ever. Guess me, I was doing a podcast. Like, what if they hit you first? I'm like, you better fucking run. Mm. You better not be playing. You know, I'm just like, anyway. But so I remember then I started drinking and I started smoking weed when I was probably 12 or 13, and I loved it. And it took me to a different place, and that's what I wanted. I played football, basketball, and baseball. I started using cocaine at a pretty young age, too. I loved that. And then I was introduced to crack cocaine when I was 17. And I fucking loved that. Don't do it, but I loved it.
Yeah.
It's the best 25 minutes of your life followed by the worst fucking 40 of your life ever. The roller coaster. So I did that. And along the way, everything. I'd eat mushrooms. I'd drink every day. I mean, I drank every day for, seriously, probably every single day from the age of 16 to the day I quit. I didn't go a day without drinking. Not one day. And I didn't go a day. If I drank, I got fucking intoxicated.
So all through school, you were
all through school. Every day. I smoked weed every single day before high school.
And the teachers never knew any of this?
Just put my sunglasses on and walked in.
Wow.
And I'm smart. Like, I did well when I wanted, but I didn't try at all. Yeah. I also think, and I'm not blaming them, they're who they are. I think I fell into that whole labeling theory. I just fell into how I was labeled. I'm like, they think I'm a rugrat. They know that we ain't got no money. They know that I have a single mom. And back then, people didn't have single moms.
Especially in our school system.
Not where she moved me to. And even back then, divorce wasn't like it is now. You didn't fit in. You were very much an anomaly. If it's like, where's your dad? He's not around. Like,
so it's an escape system.
100%. I'm like, I'm going to be somebody else. And then and I loved it. And I found a group of guys that were hardcore. Now, most of them aren't alive. That's the other thing, dude. Most of them are not here. And thankfully, we had friends that got into heroin, oxy, all that shit. My mother, never forget this. She was massively in denial. But she had told me one day, I don't know why. And she's, I love you very much. And I'm like, she always told me she loved me. She was just, do me a favor, make me one promise. And I'm like, all right, Mom, I'm like, what? She said, just don't ever do heroin, ever. Not because I was already like, but just don't do it. And she might have told me two things, which those things didn't scare me, but she was so passionate about it. And then I just wouldn't do it. Like, I wouldn't do it. Wouldn't sniff it, wouldn't shoot. I was like, nah, y'all can do what you want. Like, I'm not, and nobody's going to make me do anything anyway.
So but it was around you.
It was around me everywhere.
Wow.
And then what took a couple of my friends after that was oxy. I played baseball in college, and then I started traveling over the country playing softball, and they would pop oxylate or Tic Tacs. But I was like, no, dude, that's like opiates. I ain't fucking with it. I just wasn't going to do it. Wasn't like I was afraid. It wasn't like I was like, I'm just my mother. I'm over here fucking eight ball, driving around, 42 beers, fighting this guy. But my mom said not to use heroin, so I ain't going to use it. But I just didn't. And I was in Tampa, Florida, and I was at a softball tournament, and I was on the third floor of a real shitty hotel at 28 years of age. And my brother was in the parking lot. And one of my buddies like, yo, your brother's getting in a fight. And I remember some of it, but certainly not all of it. And I jumped from the third floor. There was a car down there. These are the guys. And I landed on the car. And then they took off. Because I think they're like, shit, this dude just jumped on our car. What's wrong with him? So I fell off the car. They drove away. I chased him. Dude, I ain't fast anyway. I wasn't catching nobody. But I tripped. There was like this concrete wall, like a divider. And I'm looking at them, and I hit it, and I went over. I woke up in the morning with so much blood in my bed, and I was stuck. Everything stuck to my end. What's weird is I woke up, and I was completely jacked up. We were playing. I don't know what field we're at. And it wasn't that, because I was almost like I woken up with my face stuck to my pillow. Somebody punched me in the head a couple times. Like, I just would get really fucked up. And it became who I was. And I went to the game. And slow pitch softballs ain't like the greatest men's game. Come on, dude. But with a bunch of former college baseball players, a lot of dudes played in the pros. So we had a good team. And I loved my teammates. I want to win. Like, they're my boys. And I remember the way they looked at me, like, when I walked in, like, disgusted. And when your fucked up friends think you're disgusted, I was like, dude, and I actually said to myself, I'm done. I'm done. I said, I'm fucking done. I knew I was going to want to have kids, too. I went home to my wife at the time. We got married twice, got divorced twice. That didn't. But I said, I'm done. And she said, why? And that was weird. And then we had a very codependent relationship. That's why substance abuse tends to work. It's codependent. And that was it. I never drank. I never did a drug again. Nothing. Never once. And from that day, never one time.
How long has it been so? You've been sober now?
23 years.
Wow.
You know, September 24th. So that's it, man. Came home. And I had I call him his OG, my buddy that I knew from work in the state. He was a hardcore dude, New Britain guy in Connecticut, like old school motherfucker. And he had been sober. And about a month before that, he pulled me aside and he said, "You'll be dead before 30 if you don't stop. And you'll definitely get fired from here," he said eventually. And he said, "Nobody's going to have the courage to tell you, but I'm telling you." And I respected him the way he carried himself. And I always had that in the back of my head. So I came back and I told him, I said, "Hey, man, I'm done." And he said, "Tell as many people as you can. You need the accountability. I mean, you're around anybody, mention it. I don't care who it is, no matter what. Peer pressure is the most powerful pressure in the world." I'll never forget he told me that. So I would tell people. And I'd let my friends look at me like I was crazy. And then I just lost those friends, which is fine. And I don't think they were mad. I think they were just like, they thought I wasn't going to judge them, but like they were doing their thing. And hell shit, I was the most out of control of everybody. So yeah, dude, I don't miss waking up. And I didn't spend 20 years in Rikers, but I didn't miss waking up in certain places and being held for the weekend either. Dude, what did I do? You know what I mean? And so, yeah, that's my journey, man.
If that was such a big part of your life, how hard was it to fight off certain times? You've had a lot of wins. You've also had a lot of times where it's shit. It's a fucking shitty fucking day. How tempting was it to not be able to celebrate the wins and also drink when you've had a lot of losses?
First of all, if I hadn't had kids, Fox, honestly, I don't know that I'd be sober, to be honest with you. I think that what always grounded me the most was, like, I didn't want them to see any of the stuff I saw growing up. So I flashed there. That was a big deal for me. It took my focus on partying, those stupid shit I was doing. I was like, okay, I want to be a great father. I want to be productive, and I want to lead other people. And it's funny, you talk about the insurance company. I'll say it all the time, too, and they'll say something like, we'll talk about, because I have a lot of people that are in recovery that come work with us. And they're like, "Yo, I won't be able to get contracted." Why? I was in recovery. I'm like, dude, the damn people that run the insurance companies drink too fucking much. Relax. Don't worry about it. I got your back. You know what I mean? They just look like they've been, they want it so bad. And it's funny because when you look at that, I'm like, dude, that became like my calling and what I wanted to do. And I'm a big fan of I like an underdog, dude. And I like a walk-on comes in there and gives everything he's got. And when it got really good, I stayed grounded. My buddy always just say, it ain't never as good as you think it is, never as bad as you think it is. So I just keep an even keel and put myself in situations where I knew what I couldn't do. I didn't go to places for 2 years, bars and shit. I stayed away because it was really hard. So I was like, I quit playing fucking softball, I quit hanging. I just didn't do anything. So I'm like, I don't trust myself. But dude, after like probably the first, I couldn't sleep. Oh shit, I couldn't sleep for a long
time. Yeah, I'm sure.
Like I couldn't sleep at side all. Effects. Like at all. And that was the hardest time. Yeah. Because I'm like, dude, I just need to do something to go to sleep. Like, I actually got to go to work in the morning. Because the thing with me was I always worked.
Yeah.
So I would go out and get fucking torn up till 4 a.m., get in a fight, have blood on me. Dude, I'd show up. You tell me to be there at 6, I'll be there at 6. Tell me to be there at 5, be at 5. I won't sleep. I used to work at UPS, unload trucks in college. I would get loaded, drive my drunk ass to UPS, fucking Jefferson Avenue in Rhode Island. I think it was Cranston, I think. Get in a truck. You get sober real quick when you unload a truck for 4 fucking hours. I'd get out of there, grab a shower, baseball practice, school, practice again, and then just start drinking.
What?
But I just always, I tell people, if you want to stop doing something, fast forward to one of the worst days and one of the worst, what's the worst thing that could happen? And it just kept me focused on the bigger picture.
Having all that history, and I know we've jumped a little bit all over the timeline a little bit. I hope the viewers are holding on to the roller coaster here because I'm enjoying learning it as we're going along. But the leadership that you have and from all the life's lessons, how has it evolved over the years? Because you must have started with you've got an iron fist for yourself, first of all. You're very hard on yourself, as am I. There's no person that when you look in the mirror, that's the person you have to answer to, right? I feel like I'm a very harsh person and leading myself alone. So how has it evolved for you now as an entrepreneur that's grown so many companies, exited companies, to where you are today?
I was an awful leader early on. You're right. I wasn't. I was a dictator. I knew how to do it, and I wanted you to do it one fucking way, my way, because I knew best for you, which was really limited, which was really immature, which was really barbaric. And there are times in your business when, listen, if we're on a boat and it's sinking, we don't need new ideas. If you have the most experience on when boats are sinking, how we live, we listen to you. But when the boat's moving along and is doing shit, we don't have to act like it's sinking. I almost was like so over the top on how I was with me that I had a really small organization. But we were tight. Culture was good. But I remember I sat back one day and I was like, who wouldn't want to work with me? And that list was really big.
Wow.
Okay, if the guy didn't like this or if it was too much for him. So I started to realize I'm going to start listening to people a lot. I used to say the new idea department is closed. Like, how stupid is that? I have really smart people around me. Honestly, Flex, I really, my staff meetings went from me talking for an hour and a half to me not being in there but once every 3 months. The meetings started, I started delegating a lot. And I realized people wanted to do more. Because I also thought, like, hell, I can make all the sacrifice in the world because I'm super hard on myself. I'm still getting better every day, but I've really learned to, because now I hope anybody out there is like, dude, I'll work with them. Like, I don't, like, I'm good. And I had to learn that, and I've taught this to a lot of people because I finally learned it myself. Dude, I grew up in a different time. And what I mean by that is, I always laugh when I watch the coaches and stuff. My football coach would grab me by the face mask and straight punch me in the fucking helmet. You know what I mean? It was a different time. When they said run till you throw up, you ran till you threw up. But I liked that. But I liked it because I was really messed up and I needed it. And you know what I knew? That felt like love to me. I wanted to be loved. The dude cares about me and loves me. And I started realizing the people I work with that they don't need the things I need. They don't, and they might have, everybody's got their own journey and trauma. But I really started to take a step back, and I got a degree in social work. I have a master's degree in criminal justice, studied psychology, and I started literally thinking a lot more. I was always just doing. And then when things start to get good, it gets a little freaky because you're like, dude, there's no trauma right now. Who am I fighting? Man, Flex was suing me, and I was fucking fighting him, and I was fighting this guy over here, and I started creating my own problems. So I really just have evolved, and a lot of that is I wake up every day, and I want to get better as a leader, and I start asking people how I can get better. And started becoming really approachable and really developed amazing leaders in the group. I was always humble, but it was like I was trying to be way too hardcore. And, dude, it ain't a football team. It ain't a bodybuilding deal. Like, it's a little different. Or rugby. Those guys are down. I was telling you earlier, I went to Ireland, and I remember walking to a cafeteria in one of these places, and I looked at the guy's face, and I was like, what happened to you? He said, you're not a rugby man. And I'm like, rugby man? I don't really know. What does that mean? He's like, rugby. Like, this is, what do you mean? It's just another day.
I'll show you my fighting, my dominant hand. These are teeth marks.
I imagine, bro. I can see those things smoking people.
But listen, I've good as good as I got. God is good as given too. Hey. But we'd always buy a pint for each other after us. If you knock my pint, tooth out, yeah, you're buying me a pint.
I love it.
That's a gent sport. It's always left on the field. But do you think that, or question is, did faith change a lot of this mindset for you?
Yeah, when I was young, my mother was like Sunday school teacher, church, above everything. My parents split, and then I played football on Sundays. Like, you grew up in little leagues, like micro, midgets, peewees, the whole deal. So I don't think I left it, but I didn't get sober by myself. God reached down, picked me up off that freaking car, told me to get my head out of my ass. I didn't see anything. It wasn't like some... I just felt this overwhelming feeling of, I got you. You're good. Like, I got you. Let me help you. That wasn't my buddies in the parking lot. It wasn't my mom. To me, it was God. It was my faith. And so I started also sharing that with people and just talking about it. And when I go to make decisions now, I ain't like, you're going to think whatever you're going to think. I'm like, all I can do is the best I can do. You're going to think whatever you're going to think. But I'm sure as hell worried about being judged. And I think I should be. And I think also it's allowed me to, I had a friend of mine one day and we were talking about something. I was like, dude, I don't know. You complain a lot. And I'm worried that if I complain, I'll be given some shit to complain about, like some real shit. So I'm going to, no matter what's going on, that's how I feel. No, man, whatever it is, like, I'm going to do what I got to do. But my faith is deep and I've made a lot of mistakes in life. I know I have. And yeah, I told the guy the other day, he's beating himself up. I'm like, dude, relax. Like, Jesus dropped the charges, bro. Calm down. Like,
Jesus dropped the chance.
Like, you're and dude, you got to do good. Like, you got to try to get better. But you can't live in this the rest of your life. And I think that's a big part for me, to see people hurt. That's why I love going to meetings, man. You can look in their eyes and you know they want it. And they're trying to believe in themselves. And my job is to get them to believe in themselves. Get them to believe that an idiot like me can run companies and sell them for that amount of money and manage 35,000 people. Shit, you can do it too. And every once in a while, somebody will challenge me. You say that, but people can't do what you're doing. Dude, that's your limited scope. They can do it.
Yeah.
You just are convincing yourself, because that's the problem. You haven't done it, so you want to act like there's something special about somebody else. They're not.
Yeah.
There's nothing special.
You're far from an idiot. I think as soon as you get up on that stage and you start saying, it's like, what's your excuse? And then you combat that with, this is what happened to me.
Correct.
And then they're running out of them. And it's, okay. And then you got a soul search. And maybe it's that small little win that they have. I seen something that you mentioned about a lady that was just about to give up on one of her sales calls.
Mm-hmm.
And she got that first sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed the whole perspective, because she didn't believe that she was going to get that sale. And then everything changed.
Dude, you look at the successful entrepreneurs, and they thought about quitting a lot. They just didn't quit. When you think about quitting, I'm not a quitter.
Yeah.
But, dude, it's hard. And I think I had to understand that, too. And people are like, I've almost quit a lot. I'm like, dude, I don't quit anything. But then I'm like, you know what, though? I understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that struggle, right? You read all these books, and then you read Think, Grow Rich, and this one. They're great books. And they have all these analogies about this guy, and then he found gold, and he stopped digging here. But, dude, like, your life's that way. At the end of the day, there's plenty of times you could have quit doing what you were doing, and none of those trophies would be out there. You wouldn't, and who knows what you'd be doing? You'd still be doing something great. You're a smart guy. You work your ass off. You're fine. You'd figure something out, but it wouldn't be that journey because you had given up on it. And there are a lot of other people probably that were pretty good that gave up on it.
Too many.
And they're probably really good.
We know a lot of personal people who had incredible, genetically, whatever it could be.
100%.
They just didn't have the mentality to persevere through the storm.
Quit on themselves. And people say stuff like, they self-sabotage. I'm like, that's another, I don't even know what that means. I think that's such a cop-out. What do you mean? So now you didn't do it because you intentionally sabotaged it, so you weren't at fault. I was, but I was worried about being so good. And no, you're just weak in your character and constitution. You can get strong in both, dude. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I really thrive. That's why I started doing this online, honestly, is really, I was just doing a podcast, and the guy was talking about one of the guys. And I try to be nice, because my buddy's, dude, you don't have to call him out all the time. I'm like, I'm not trying to call him out. But he says, these people say stupid shit's a lie, and they didn't do those things. They didn't sell drugs. They didn't get beaten up. They didn't go to jail. Stop lying. Just tell the truth. It's so funny, because when I was growing up, I said this to Wes the other day. I talked to him briefly. I was like, dude, it's funny, because now the story you got, everybody wants that story, and they're lying about it to have it. But 30 years ago, they didn't want that story, and people discriminated against
you. That's right.
But now it's, I'm going to get a badge of honor. And you're like, bro, you know you didn't. That's not your story. You can barely go to the bathroom without getting nervous. You didn't go, and it's not a bad thing. Just be who you are. And I think that's what I want people to do. Be who you are. Because people will get nervous if you're not. Like me, good, bad, and different, I'm who I am. I'm who I am. And I'm 51 years of age, I'm who I am. I do what I do, whatever you like and don't like, I'm just doing the best I can on a daily basis. You don't like it? Okay. You like it? Okay. But I'm going to keep doing what I think I need to do. I'm going to answer to what I need to answer to. I'm going to keep my faith in lock for me. So I'm still going to make mistakes. And then if it ain't great for my spiritual life, my family life, my business life, why do I got to do it? And that kind of keeps me going. But it's hard nowadays because people have been manipulated through faith.
Yeah.
So they're defensive. And I ain't qualified to preach to anybody. I'm just trying to not spend eternity in a bad place. I'm trying to do the best I can on a daily basis. But I think that's, you got to kind of, we think about that too. There's so many things that people are like, you can say this, can't say that. I'm like, dude, I'm going to say whatever I want, whenever I want, if you like it, if you don't. I can't, it's not really that deep either. I'm not trying to solve all the world's problems. I know who I am. But my faith was big, and I think without it, I wouldn't have. People always, what class did you take? Did you go to AA? Did you do this? Did you do that? I'm like, dude, I just have faith. And all the stuff works, by the way. I didn't go to anything. And it wasn't that I had gone to some AA meetings when I was still drinking, weirdly enough. I went with my uncle a few times. He was trying to get sober. And I just, you got to do what works for you. You know what I mean? And I was in such a place where I'm like, dude, I ain't going to tolerate anybody. I just know that about me. I'm not going to fucking tolerate them. And when they get up and start saying stuff and start telling these stories, I'm like, I'm not going to tolerate them. And so I had to be away from everybody. But then I took my addiction. That's the thing about addictive personalities. You know, when people say to me, man, I'm in recovery, I say, congratulations. They go, thanks. I go, congratulations on being in recovery. That's good. And congratulations on having an addictive personality. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, dude, congratulations. Hey, you didn't do what you do without having an addictive personality. You just turned it to training. Mm. You turned it to your sport, your craft. But you could have turned it to something else.
Absolutely.
So congratulations, I say to people, you have an addictive personality. Let's take, what do you want to be addicted to? Providing for your kids. Because people say, I'll die for my kids. I'm like, bro, you wouldn't work 30 hours a week for your kids. You wouldn't die for them. Stop doing that. If you won't work full-time for your children, you're broke and you won't work full-time for them. You would not give your life for them. You won't even give 40 hours a week for them, you lying sack of shit. And it's okay to know that about yourself. Change it. But you can't have it both ways. There's no way you can say all those things. The greatest gift I hope I've given my kids is teaching them a work ethic. Faith they got. Okay, we talked about it when they were growing up, and that's awesome. It's their faith. And they've actually taken to a better level, I think, than either me or their mother did. But work ethic and attitude. And that for me, dude, is paramount, man.
In Land on the Plain, I give you two more questions. What is the thing that you're most proud of?
Being a good parent.
Yeah, you talked about your kids a lot.
Being a good parent. And by far.
Yeah. You can elaborate if you want, but
yeah, no, listen, I didn't know if I'd be a good parent. And I made tons of mistakes, but I'm just saying, like, being there for them, being present, making sure they're a priority, that's important to me.
Yeah.
That's always been important to me. No matter how kids, I want to have a lot of kids. Like, that's really important. I think part of it, too, is growing up, it's funny because they'll take a couple different paths. Like, I'll meet people and they'll go, I don't want to have kids because of what I went through. And I'm not judge anybody. Have kids, don't have kids, have 100 of them, have none. You do you. But for me, it was I owed that because that saved my life. Because my faith was deep, but flex, no kids, bro, I ain't sober. I'm not sitting here doing anything. I'm not. And that's okay. I had a different path in life. So being a parent, I think I'm the most proud of. And I just watch every day because when you have kids, like, you created a life. And that's when everything changed for me. Because I was like, dude, I ain't letting them down for nothing. And I want them to be proud of their last name, be proud of who they are. I'm still going to make plenty of mistakes. Be transparent with them.
That's what I was going to say. The kids know all this.
Everything. Everything. Like, it is what it is. And I think also having substance issues, there is plenty of research that shows you how predisposed people are from a genetical standpoint. So I share everything. I was sharing with them early on, like, you might have a problem. You have to understand this. If they're going to make decisions, I didn't want to make them with lack of information. I want them to have all the information. I didn't pretend to, shit, I don't shirk. My daughter was student of the year, her high school senior year. Same day she's student of the year, I'm in the newspaper. Fucking police logs. Same day. Now, loaded gun, airport, I forgot, stupid shit. I've been arrested plenty of times for that. I hadn't been arrested since they were born, but it is what it is. I didn't walk in and want to have a loaded gun. I forgot. State of Connecticut, they don't have much discretion. They have to arrest you. But it was like a microcosm of, look how great what she's done is. I'm still a fucking train wreck. I'm doing the best I can, right? But what am I going to act like? It's just, and I remember just, we laughed about it. What are you going to do? And I think that I wanted them to have that desire to protect other people too. And I think that is, when I get around people, like, I like talking to you a lot. I like talking to you last night. I like the way you carry yourself, but also like that there's this sense of anybody is okay in my presence. They're going to be safe. I'm never going to speak down to them. There's none of that shit. And I like that a lot. I think part of, if we've had some success or are in a position to physically protect people, whatever it is, we have an obligation to do that. And I think that's cool. I like that. Yeah. I like, you know what I mean? It's funny because I remember when my son was like, man, week old. And somebody tried to break into my little apartment we lived in. Mother was sleeping. My daughter was sleeping. And so I opened the door. And I just opened the door and just put me right in the guy's face. That was it. I just opened the door and I was like, what's up, bro? And just like that. And then he freaked out, of course. And I wasn't going to shoot him. He's run away. It ain't a movie. But I want him to know not. And my neighbor was like, oh my God. And I said, well, I'm glad they didn't come to your door. And she's like, why? I'm like, oh, I'd much rather have them attempt to rob me because they're probably not going to be successful. And for years, we moved shortly after. It was just not a great area and two young kids. And my neighbors actually got in a fight, and the dude was beating his girl up in the yard. I went out there, started throwing his skinny ass all over the yard, whacked him once. Cops pull up. The woman he was beating jumps on my back. She starts scratching the shit out of me. And I was like, and the cop was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, he arrests him, and then he's like, next time, mind your own business. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
He's like, then move. If you can't mind your own business, move, because you're going to get arrested, you know? And I think that when we start doing that as parents, and what your kids are young, but as they get to do things, It's a cool ride, dude. It's cool to watch the independence. It's cool to watch them become an adult. It's cool to watch them get better at things than you are. It's cool to get to a point where you eventually take advice from them. It's really cool.
They're at that stage now, too.
Yeah, dude.
The 20s.
I had a guy tell me about my... You have a boy and a girl?
A boy and a girl.
Okay. You'll go through three phases with your boy. Psychologically, every father does. First phase, he will idolize you. And if you're a really good dad, he'll idolize you probably for too long. Then he'll go through a phase where he demonizes you. It doesn't matter what you do. He'll hate it. It doesn't matter what it is. You could be doing the exact same shit. And then he'll humanize you. I coached my son's football, basketball, baseball. I went to every game with him. And so it's just, it's really cool to watch. And yeah, he called me the other day and he's like, I'll give you some advice in your podcast. It's actually good advice. And he's like, what are you doing? And you should be doing this over here. And why are you trying to, but you're this who you are already. And I'm like, shit. Yeah. Like, that's actually good. And I'm, like, super freaking proud.
I was going to say, are you reciprocated of that advice?
Hell yeah.
Okay, good.
God, yes. That's what I want, right? That's what I'm supposed to. My daughter will give me that. Dad should try to keep me calm. Mm. And, dude, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I'm proud of who they are, and I'm along for the ride, dude.
I love it.
And I think that's one thing about your daughter, too. You'll learn, because you're an intimidating guy. So you're eventually... She's going to meet somebody eventually. And I know it's so hard because
it's not fucking happening, man.
I know it's not. I know. I'm sorry, but I'm trying. Don't fucking smack me with them hands or nothing, but I'm trying right here. But let's say when she's 100 fucking years old, okay?
That's right. That's right.
When she's 100, okay? She's going to meet somebody. And that's going to be the first time that the dude that talks to her will not be afraid of you because you're an intimidating guy. And he won't be afraid because his motives are the same as yours. He wants her to be okay. He doesn't want to hurt her. He's got a good heart. He wants her to be safe. So if you want her to be safe and he wants her to be safe, you'll never be at odds. You're on the exact same team. Why would he be afraid of his teammate? And that's my daughter. I get to a point where I met a guy. He's not bad.
You like him?
Yeah. He's not afraid. I could rip him in half, but he's not afraid. We're on the same team. Yeah. He definitely wants what's dude. It's just you get a lot. It's cool.
Have you seen the movie Den of Thieves?
Yes.
Remember the scene?
That's exactly 50 right. 50 Cent. Yes. Yes. That guy.
100%. So my boy is Uli Monster. He has the fastest knockout. He was on that scene. We just did a podcast.
Oh, really?
Okay. And he was in the garage training with all them. And that is going to be played. There's no question.
It should be played.
It's going to happen. I've already envisioned it that I'm going to have every fucking goon from this kid in my garage.
Should. And I'd like to show up just to be there because I'd love to be there. But I'm telling you, the right dude will be like,
yeah, like, yeah, the right dude.
The right dude.
Yeah.
He'll be like, thank you. And, sir, I'm good. We're on the same team.
But I'm hoping it's the wrong dude to do that fucking scene.
I know. It's funny. Every guy I talk to that has a back, and it's dude before I even said, it's not happening. I'm like, she's 4. I'm like, I know, dude. It's just, I know. I'm just, and mine's 22. But it's gut-wrenching, dude.
My gun collection grew when my wife was pregnant.
I can, dude, don't get me wrong. You don't even need the guns. You're going to be freaking out already.
Oh, shit. That's good. That's good. Fast forward in 5-10 years from now, personal brand. And a family first life. Where do you see yourself?
We'll do a billion this year. I want to continue to scale the hell out of it. I want to create a lot of wealth for a lot of people. And I want to put a lot of protection in place for people over the country. We also focus on middle American families. So that's really cool. Not that we'll sell life insurance to anybody. But a lot of lead generation is middle American. So, like, it's really detrimental if they don't have it. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing if they do. Not that I don't enjoy selling policies to anybody. But when you realize, dude, this is the one thing that can separate you from foreclosure, being homeless, like a completely different life. So we'll keep cranking on that. We'll do billions of dollars a year, and that's great. And the personal brand for me has now become getting with you it's an honor. And I don't say, if I didn't mean it, I wouldn't ever say it. It's an absolute honor. The things you've done, who you are, what you stand for. And even last night I said, when I hung up to Andrew, I'm like, dude, that's one of the nicest, most genuine, smart, but good dudes I've met. And I would just talk to him over the phone. And I want to build it because from a business standpoint, entrepreneurial standpoint, I've been through about every part of the journey. I know my shit. I won't give you advice on personal training. Talk to my man over here. I don't know shit about that. I won't give you advice on bodybuilding professional. I won't give you advice on being a professional athlete. I won't give you advice on getting as big as you are podcast. But I want to be able to, I want to be a place where somebody that actually wants to be an entrepreneur, a safe place they can go to, and I can help them. We started doing that. I started doing some coaching. I was like,
I started doing that. Yeah.
I started doing that, and people are coming in. And I'm like, I spoke at an event recently. A bunch of people reached out and said, what do you have for an event? And I was like, shit, we're doing a 100-person event in April. And I wanted to be a place where, and listen, I'm not mad at guys that they have a money grab. Good for them. They charge you. Good for them, dude. I feed you a bunch of times, bring you in, and make a few bucks. I'm happy with that. I would do the life insurance deal. They're like, that's all it costs? I'm like, yeah, that's all it costs, dude. I'm going to keep going. It's capitalism. I want to make a few bucks. I ain't doing it all for free, and I like to give back and do a bunch of things, but I want to help you. And I think for me, I want people to understand that there is a true game plan. There is a true blueprint, and I love giving advice. And if I don't know, I'll find somebody that does. If you ask me something that's not in my wheelhouse, dude, I love it. Hey, I don't know. Go ask this guy. What do you know about AI? I know a lot of people know a lot about it. What do you want to know? I'll connect you with them. I don't know, dude, but I'll connect you with them.
Yeah.
But I can pontificate about what I've read. Would that help? But I got good people that I can get you around. So, dude, that's been life-changing. I do training on public speaking. What is your EBITDA? How do you build a net? What is the exit? What's the multiple? And I went through all that, and I asked all the questions. That was the other thing, dude. Before I even wanted to sell a company or exit one, I was like, shit, who buys them? I didn't know anything, right? These private equity. I started meeting with people all over New England. Or just going to meet with them. I did shit. I met with 12 different large companies. I never did anything with any of them, but I got a lot of experience. And I made connections with guys that have reached out and said, hey, I start another fund. Would you want to invest? And I do stuff with them, right? Still do stuff in real estate that I like. I do a bunch of stuff in New York that I still love doing, and I'm very passive, but it's cool to see. But I want to grow the personal brand to a point where people understand that there are really good people out there that want to help. I had Shannon Sharp on the show. We were talking, and he was asking me about where we're going and what we're doing. And he said, the thing about that, what you're doing is what you're he said, honestly, like, you actually want to help people. You just have to separate from everybody else. Like, no different. We had, like, you had to separate from everybody else. And I think that I'm very candid. I'm very upfront. I'm very honest with you about what you can do. But I also have this information, and I can give it to you. So that's been, and I grew up playing ball. I loved coaching. I coached forever. Coached basketball, baseball, football. Learned a lot about all of them. I mean, I was a baseball and football guy. I played basketball just to stay in shape. I hated basketball. Hated it. Like, I hated running. Hated there's not a lot of physical contact. I could foul out in one half. You know what I mean? Like, I knew my role.
Yeah.
Don't shoot it. My coach would be like, why are you shooting my ball? And I'm like, yeah, I got a rebound. He's like, give it to Mike. And I was like, shit, I didn't see Mike. I don't give a shit where Mike is. My buddy scored 35 points a game. Give it to Mike. So my job is fucking rebound. Give it to Mike. If I was in the paint, I was allowed to go back up. But if not, give it to Mike. Go set a screen for Mike. If somebody fouls Mike too hard, whack the guy. I'm like, I can definitely do that for
him. I love that job.
Yeah, so it's that's what I want to grow it to, man. And have fun. Yeah. I'm having fun doing this. This is fun. Yeah, I'm having fun doing it.
And we can't skip over the Shannon Sharp podcast, which is huge right now. Shannon Sharp is
massive.
Like, probably the most trending podcaster I know. 100%. Obviously, he's had some savages on, and he just had Cat Williams on, which broke the internet.
100%.
And then he was just on your podcast, too.
100%.
Which, plug it away.
Close and Conquer. Yeah, we started that about a year ago. It was Punch Me in the Face for a little bit. Then I got around some people that were doing a hell of a lot better than me. I'm a big taking advice kind of guy. And they're like, find something you can always talk about. So I'm always talking about closing and conquering yourself, the whole deal. Had Shannon on. First of all, really good dude.
Great guy.
Just a great
Unk.
Dude, man. Really, what a great story. And we had the opportunity to do something. We jumped in and flew back together. And I just picked his brain, man, and talked about what he's doing, how it trends. And a lot of good advice in the pod, too. Just talking about how he engages and what he lets the guests do and what he does. There were so many enlightening things I got out of it. The way he carries himself, the way he talks about what he talks about. His upbringing's hardcore. Like, he shared some stuff, and you're like, God, grandma and grandpa, and had a family tragedy, and then don't call him at practice, let him do that. Like, he's locked in. And D2 football, I'm like, NFL, I was always going to the NFL. But you went to, I was always going to the NFL. Okay, got it. Like, I was going to the NFL. But more so, Flex, I learned a ton from him. It was great to be around him. Yeah, and I ain't betting against him. This is going to be the biggest, which was a great move to go to First Take, and that's obviously been a little nightcap, what he's doing with Ocho. We want to get him on. I just saw him at the airport the other day. He's just genuinely good people, dude. And I didn't know his nickname was, I think, Pee Wee when he was younger. He was small.
And this
I was
guy
like,
was.
Dude, get out of here. He's like, yeah, dude, I was small. I'm like, I don't know if I buy that. Like, small relative to who?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's just a great testimony. Talk about rags to riches. Just a great testimony to country guy and trying to get out and do his thing, and self-belief, dude. That I think that, but it's talking to you about what you did, honestly, was the closest I've heard, and I don't know if I remember anybody else doing it, to what he did in football. You just went to a different place real quick. You're like, here's why. Here's what I was doing. Free gym membership. My dad. Braveheart speech. I'm going to go here. Why not? Boom. And then here was this, and here was this, and here was this, and here was this. He was the same way.
You left the doorstep fucking trophy out.
Yeah. I didn't know you you said that about grandparents. I'm like, I don't know what you want to do with that. That one was for you to share. I'm not disrespecting any of those damn trophies. I got a good memory, but I ain't disrespecting those damn trophies. Because I wouldn't be keeping it as a door. But grandma can do whatever she wants.
Grandma can do whatever she wants. That, you know that. Man, it's been a pleasure to have you on. If there's anything you want to land the plane on, the camera is there. Promote that event, please, if you want to.
Yeah, first of all, I appreciate you, man. This means the world to me and that you took the time, because you can have about anybody you want on. And I'm very humbled by it. I'm very appreciative. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, bro. Yeah, man, you can find me on Instagram again. Last name is M-E-A-I-K-E. Close and Conquer is a podcast on YouTube. It's my name. That'd be great if you check down there, subscribe, share. It'd be awesome. I'd love to have you on our podcast if you would do it. Not to absolutely put you on the spot here, but we'd love to do it. We're doing an in-person event in Boca Raton, Florida in April. So if you're ever down in Boca.
That's really where I used to live.
Really?
Yeah.
Then when you come back down, you got to come hang out.
We'll
do something. We'll jump on a boat, go to a game, do whatever you want to do. And we do that. We bring I do events a couple times a month, smaller, more about 15, 20. And do I do them at my house? Oh. Yeah, I do them at my place, man. I started like looking around and I'm like, dude, you know what? We go to these other places. It's a little bit more sterile. It's easy to get to. What do I care? Like, it's just cool. It's a better environment. Take care of people for a couple of days and pour into them. That's my big deal. If you don't leave there a lot better than you were when you got there, and you're not equipped to get better at what you're doing, and do success stories. Like, I tell people, I want to see other people do so much more than I've done. I want to be like, dude, hey, I took this piece. And simple stuff. Like, guys will call me and say, I sold my company. I have an earnout. I can make more money of $1 million. I'm like, okay, will you help me? I'm like, yeah, come to the course. And this guy just reached out to me the other day. He goes, hey, I hit it. I made another $1 million. And a lot of the advice you gave me, I'm like, so a couple grand for $1 million, that was a good ROI. He just laughed. So I want to do that. So you can find DM on Instagram. I'll respond. I promise you. I just love real people. There was a slogan we launched Fan First Life. I did it real estate. I did the same thing in waste management. Real people, real numbers, real results. Wow. And that's what I want. So you can find me anywhere. Flex, it's an honor, bro. You are a legend. Oh. And you took that and dumped it into here. And when I was talking to Merriman, I was like, dude, I got to get on that podcast. And so I really appreciate you getting me in. Super Bowl week was huge for you. I know you played a game and knocked some people around, but you're still here, brother.
I don't know about that. My knees are still on the fucking field.
But you're here.
But I'm here. I'm here. We did have that conversation last night. I will be hobbling, so don't ask any questions. We're good to go. But, man, it's truly a great story. Let me just end this podcast by saying a true rags to riches, and them S's, riches are growing, but you're pouring back, seeing other people, yes, see their true and better self. And that's what I want on this podcast, is to hear stories such as this, because so many people are in different circumstances and they think the train is gone, or this has happened, or that has happened. I can't do it because I've got a record, or I fucked up 20 years ago. It doesn't matter. That was a chapter of your life. And as you mentioned earlier, I have all walks of life around me. But one thing is, everybody's there for one another. And we're all trying to better ourselves, regardless of what happened in the past. We're all on a rocket ship. It's just hold the fuck on. And that's where we're going, right? Amen. To the moon. But on that note, straight out the lair from me and this savage, we are out.